Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on depression when we come back. You know, back in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, it's down to less than 38 days. And these global 2,000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years under the Club of Rome plan. Well, in Revelation chapter 6, we see the same thing where the God of Israel told us essentially the same story in essentially the same words, using false prophets, war, famine, and disease. Back in 1920, nearly 50% of our people lived on the land as subsistence farmers, producing their own food, and food for the rest of the world and for you and me. Today, we Americans have chosen to live in our cities, and now only 3% of us live on the land. So 97% of Americans, then, are not self-sufficient in our food production. We produce grain for export, all right, and then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support the Global 2000 World Population Control Program. And these globalists, with their genocide agenda, have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause. And let you and I live for ours. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about the big D word. It's depression. We haven't had depression in the United States since the 1930s. We've been through depressions. A depression is where prices decline. Now, they keep telling us that inflation is bad. That's where inflation and prices increase, it would seem like to me. Then, well, if inflation is bad and prices are increasing, then deflation must be good. And prices going down must be good for you and me and the economy. Frankly, I would prefer deflation. But our Fed chief, Mr. Bernanke, and our government officials tell us that's bad for us. Now, back in the 1930s, the unemployment rate was about 25%. That's the bad news. The good news is that the employment rate was 75% working, 25% weren't. Today they tell us that there's 5% that are unemployed. Now the underground economy, the underground newsletters tell us that the actual unemployment rate here in the United States is more like 13%, or about half what it was during the last Great Depression. And of course we have skewered statistics coming out of our government agencies. They're telling us that inflation is 4%. Come on, boys and girls, you and I can figure out that inflation's more than 4% just based upon the prices that we're paying. But our government tells us the official, and this is the official, inflation rate is only 4.1%. Well, governments lie a lot, and the more desperate the circumstances become, the greater the lies become. During World War II, our government lied to us constantly. And they do that to keep up morale. You see, if we actually told you that the American economy went into recession in June of 2005, see, that would have put the kibosh on consumer spending. I mean, the recession has been getting worse and worse, but it would have been worse and worse much earlier had we told you the truth. It kind of reminds me when you're watching one of these horror flicks, you know, one of these disaster movies. And they have a theme in these disaster movies. Whatever the disaster is, the government officials, when they're talking among themselves, they always say, we've got to keep this under wraps so that the public does not learn the true scope of the problem. Because if they do, we'll have chaos on our hands. So the first thing that the government does whenever there's a disaster looming is to keep the facts from the public. It's always been that way, boys and girls, and it's that way today. It's going to be that way in the future. So your government is trying to keep you people from panicking. And so I come along and say, well, I think that you should be able to have the true facts so that you can make an intelligent decision for yourself, irrespective of the decision that government wants all of us to make in unison for the benefit of somebody else. I know that a depression may not be good for General Motors and Ford and Dodge or Chrysler, but the depression might actually be good for you and me. Have you ever thought about that? I mentioned earlier, I said, I can't think of a better business to be in than food and a famine. But you know, you couldn't prepare for producing food in a famine unless you thought, knew, or had reason to believe that famine was coming. So, whatever it is that you want to sell, you want to have some kind of an idea as to what's the market condition going to be like a year, 2 years, or 5 years out, 10 years out, 20 years out. What's the long-term expectations for gold? For instance, today gold is $900 an ounce. People buying gold today at $900 an ounce have two things on their mind. One, gold has peaked at 900 and from here on it's going back down. Or two, gold has not peaked at 900 and it's going to go to 1800, so I might as well buy it today at 900 because it's going to double and I'll double my money over what period of time? Is it a year, 5 years, 10 years? Now, when we look back in history at markets and market conditions, let's take a look at gold that peaked at $850 an ounce in 1980. From then on, it went down. It went down to a low of about $274. I think that was about 1997 through 2000 in that neighborhood. It was a little below $300. Starting about 2001, over the last 6 years, it's gone from that low of $275 to $900. That's pretty significant because if you could have seen that trend, then you wanted to buy all the gold you could get your hands on in 1997 through 2000, in that three-year period. And then in 2000, the price would go up to $280, $85, $90, $95, $200, $300, and then on up to $900. Now, what would you sell it for today? Assuming that you thought that the price of gold had reached its peak right now, today, in 2008, would you then sell it and take $100 bills? Would you take Federal Reserve Note dollars? Would you take your profit? Yeah, the average guy would do that. But the dollar has been losing, over the same period of time, its purchasing power. So the value of the dollar has gone from $1.21 when it reached its peak against the euro, until today it's down around 75 cents. And so it's lost nearly, you know, 50 cents, it's 45 cents of its purchasing power over the last 8 years. Now, we here in America, we don't notice that. We see inflation here. We don't notice the purchasing power of the dollar on the dollar index. But when you travel outside the United States, you'll notice when you get to Europe, the dollar is 50 cents cheaper. And that's because now your hotel room costs you more in dollars than it does in euros. For instance, the price of gold in euros is only $580. 580 euros buys an ounce of gold. $900 buys an ounce of gold. Now let's take a look. The worker over in Europe, when he works, he gets paid 10 euros per hour. And here in the United States, you get paid $10 per hour. He can buy more gold with his labor than you can buy with your labor. Now that's what the dollar index is all about. This is called economics. And the economic newsletters that come out, and I've told you about the Privateer and the International Forecaster, the Money Changer, the McIlvany Report, the James Cook Report, the Kitco Reports. And remember, these Kitco reports now are all free. They're kind of synopsis of what's going on. It doesn't give you a real comprehensive and detailed view of what's going on, but it'll tell you some of the highlights. Some of the highlights. For instance, you people out there in Radio Land don't know much about the housing collapse. You get little snips and pieces, and Brian Williams and Katie Couric, they tell you that, well, the government's working on it, and they'll tell you the political angle. Government is concerned about it, and but you don't need to be concerned because it's not that bad yet. But they're not giving you the forecast for the future. So, a couple days ago, I gave you the forecast for the future, and I said, okay, now watch what's happening. As of right now, 800,000 houses have been foreclosed on in just the last 6 months. These CDOs, these commercial debt obligations, are set to reset to higher rates of interest as we progress along, and some 80% of the houses sold over the last 6 or 8 years have been on these adjustable rate mortgages. They're called ARMs, A-R-Ms. What you haven't been told is, what does that portend going out into the future, 2009, 10, 11, and 12? And I pointed this out in program one. 20 million mortgages are going to reset over the next 3 or 4 years. So what you're seeing today is the tip of the iceberg. That's 800,000. And then there'll be a million, then 2 million, and 4 million, 8 million, 16 million, and 20. Now, when you get 20 million houses that are going into foreclosure, boys and girls, that's going to be really serious business. And long before that happens, the economy's going to collapse. Now, when economies collapse like they did in the 1930s, that doesn't mean that everybody dies tomorrow morning. It means that your living standard goes down dramatically for a period of time. And in some cases, people's living standards may go down for 10 or 15 years. I remember when I was a kid, we got by all right. We had food to eat. We had a house to live in. We had running water. We had a toilet. You know, we had a bathtub. But when you compare our living standards in 1943 with our living standards today, they were pretty primitive. And that's the bottom line. It isn't that you're going to die. It's that you're not going to live nearly as well unless you prepare for the coming deflation. And so I have been reporting to you from time to time in our series of programs, and this is one of those series of programs, that we're entering a period of recession. And the recession began in June of 2005. And the reason that I can put a date on the current recession is because the housing market peaked in June of 2005. And when you take a look at the volume of money that's being printed or produced or put into circulation through loans, and then you take a look at the gross domestic product and its growth, when you're printing more money than the growth rate, then you have negative growth. And when you have negative growth, you have recession. So what we've been doing is borrowing money, which is fine. You know, as long as you borrow money, your living standard won't go down. And Americans are doing that right now today. You are unable to pay your bills, and so you're using your credit cards and you're borrowing money to make your payments. Well, okay, that's fine for this month, next month, and the month after. What happens when the credit card maxes out? Either one, you gotta have higher wages to cover the credit card debt and interest, or you've got to have a forgiveness of the credit card debt, or you're going to take a drastic cut in your living standard when your credit card is shut off, your house is foreclosed, and your car is taken away. I mean, come on, kids. It doesn't take a genius to figure that out. And when that happens to millions of people simultaneously across the country, then we call that a major recession. When it happens on a grand scale, like the 1930s, we call that a depression. Now, nations around the world have been going through these recessions and depressions, you know, forever. It's not something brand new. We saw it happen in Argentina in 2001, and we see it going on today in Zimbabwe, and I reported that to you a couple of days ago. I said, you know, gasoline in Zimbabwe is $237,000 a gallon. That's the bad news. The worser news is that there isn't any gasoline to buy, period, at any price, whether it's $237,000 a gallon or $6 million a gallon or $3 a gallon, it ain't there. And so the Zimbabweans have 80% unemployment and food shortages. All right. Now, I said the other day that when we take a look at food and famine, we're looking at Bible prophecy. The only reason that I could predict with any certainty or accuracy that in the future of America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and you democracies of Western Europe, that famine is in your future is Bible prophecy. If I hadn't read it in the Bible, I wouldn't have a clue. I wouldn't have an inkling, because we got plenty of money. We just go out and print it. Just ask George Bush. We want $1 trillion to fight a war in Iraq. We just go out and print the money up, and we just borrow it. Now, when you've got assets, when you've got credit, that's fine. You can do that. As long as you got a credit card and you still got some room on it, well, then you can go out and borrow more money. But it's when that credit card gets maxed out. Now, nations like America and Great Britain and Spain and France and China and Japan, they all trade among each other. You know, each nation trades back and forth. So you want to buy a Rolls Royce that comes from England. And so you want to buy a Caterpillar tractor, well, that comes from Peoria, Illinois. So if you're a Japanese and you want to buy a Caterpillar tractor, you're going to buy that from the United States. And when we want to buy something like a Kubota or something like that, that comes from Japan. Now, as it turns out, the Japanese are selling more to us than we're selling to them. And so we have to keep track of these trade deficits, and so we write them an IOU and a 3x5 card, you know, just says, I owe you $50 billion, and we send it over there, and they put it in their vault, they put it in their cash register, and they save that up. Well, over time, then we expect that we will sell them more Caterpillar tractors than we buy Kubotas or Toyotas or something else, and so, therefore, we would get paid back our IOU, and now the balance has been balanced out. But over the last 20 years or so, we Americans have been running a consistent and continuous balance of trade deficit. That is, we have been buying more from overseas than we have been selling. And today, every single year, we sell about $150 billion worth of stuff. And then we turn around and buy about $800 billion worth of stuff. That's about a $650 billion deficit every year. Now, you know, that's fine. And the Chinese, they're happy to do business with us, and the Japanese and everybody else. But at some point in time, I don't know when this point in time is going to come, but at some point in time, we have to start paying that down. I don't know when that point of time is coming, but it has to come at some point in time. And if it doesn't, then historically what happens is that the countries that are not paying this down, like the Zimbabweans, they didn't pay their debts down. And so what they did was they went out and printed more of their local currency, and then they went out into the marketplace and they started buying with their own currency. And then their currency, they just keep printing more and more of it, and it begins to devaluate. You know, the more of something you have, the cheaper it gets. And so pretty soon it got to the point where the Saudi Arabians wouldn't take their local Zimbabwean currency anymore, because it doesn't take a whole lot of work, you know, to run the printing presses and just print off a batch. And so then when the Saudis went down to buy something with this Zimbabwean stuff, they got paid less and less. So here's the way that works. And we see that going on today. You go out in the marketplace and you work for $10 an hour, and then you find out that the price of gas goes from $2 to $3. Now all of a sudden, you have to pay a dollar a gallon more. That's a third, that's a 33% increase in the price of gas. Well, if you got a 33% raise in your wages, it wouldn't make any difference. But we're not getting these wage increases. See, inflation is running at about 10%, and our wage increases are running about 3%. So while prices are going up 10% a year, our wages are going up 3% a year, and our standard of living is going down 7% a year, so we have to borrow more on our credit cards. Now that's fine, and we'll make up or take up the slack until the credit card maxes out. Or until your house, you know, we were going down and borrowing money against our house, which kept going up in value. Well, those houses aren't going up in value now, they're going down. And now that they're going down in value, we can't borrow money against them. And so at some indefinite point in the future, this is going to impact you, just like it's going to impact me and everybody else. So when that occurs, then we're going to have to take a little decrease in our standard of living. And of course, the greater the decrease, then the greater the pain that you're going to suffer. All right, so now what we're trying to do here is to figure out a way that we can anticipate the future. And we can do that because if it's happened to other countries in the past, we can just about figure it's going to happen to us. So back in 1923, the Germans started printing money, lots of it, and to pay their bills. And pretty soon their money inflated to a point that their economy collapsed. And we call that hyperinflation. It was the German hyperinflation of the 1920s. They're not the only guys that have ever done that. And neither are the Rhodesians. They're not the first people that have ever inflated their money. It's been going on for thousands of years, kids. But it always has a bad end. And here's what the bad end is. The bad end is you lose all of your assets. You see that house that you're making payments on, and the car that you're making payments on, and the credit cards that you're making payments on, and all this. Okay, well, you have all these toys, and you're using all these toys, and one day they get foreclosed on or taken away, or you can't replace them, or you can't buy because you don't have the money, and then you have to do without. And that's the hard part in life, is doing without. You know, today you want to go out to steak and ale and have dinner with the wife. You got the money to do it. You got the credit card. What happens when you don't have the credit card and you don't have the money? Geez, then you got to stay home and eat pinto beans and cornbread. Now, you know, if you're used to eating pinto beans and cornbread, it's not the end of the world. But you know, if you're not used to that, that could be quite a new experience for you. And I'm afraid a lot of people are going to have some of these new experiences in the not-too-distant future. So I thought, well, let's take a look at what can we do today in 2008 that will ameliorate or what will lessen the pain of 2009, 10, 11, and 12, and maybe give us a little better edge on economics and standard of living and living costs than our neighbors down the street. Now, Americans needed to make some choices, and they did. In 1913, we had a choice to make, and we made it. And we decided we wanted a central bank with paper money like all the nations of Europe. Now, our God told us not to do that, and he told us not to do that in the Eighth Commandment that says, Thou shalt not steal. And in Leviticus 19:35 and 36 and Deuteronomy 25:13 through 16, he says, don't use unjust weights and balances. Don't use paper. Use gold and silver coin. Our founding fathers followed that advice in our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, which says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. We followed that from 1792 to 1914. Then in 1914, we deviated from that principle and we went into paper money, and in 1933, we went bankrupt. That's what the Great Depression was all about. It was bankruptcy. Gold that had been valued at $20.67 an ounce was revalued to $35. What that means is that yesterday we were giving you an ounce of gold at $20. Today we're giving you an ounce of gold at $35. So I borrowed $100 from you. Yesterday, I would have given you 5 ounces of gold for the $100. Today, I'm going to give you 3 ounces of gold for the $100. I'm going to stiff you 2 ounces. I'm going to pay you 2 ounces less than we agreed to. Now, that's what happened in the 1930s. That's what the American government did. And that's what we're going to do again. And all of those people over there that are holding dollars in China and Japan are going to get stiffed. Not 100 cents on the dollar, but, you know, 90 cents or 80 cents or something. They're not going to get paid full value. Now, when you do that to people, it makes them mad. You know, if I borrowed $100 from you and paid you back 60, you'd get just mad as hell. And so, in order for me to do that, what I have to do is revalue. That is, I've got to revalue my money, and that's what's going on right now. We are revaluing our money by printing more of it. We need more money to support those 730 military installations around the world. So we just print it up and go pay those people in those countries with this printed up money, which is consistently buying less and less as the value of the money goes down and prices go up. We call that inflation. And so the government is actually, it's great for government. Inflation's the greatest thing since sliced white bread, because we buy it for $100 and pay back 80. God, it's a hell of a deal. And, but then, you know, pretty soon people catch on to that, and then they get kind of mad when you stiff them. And then they go to the next step and they say, well, we won't sell to you anymore. And so the Saudis have been doing that recently. If you want to know why gasoline has gone from a dollar in 2000 to $3 in 2008, it's because we had a recession in 2000. And in order to solve that recessionary problem, Alan Greenspan started printing more money. They started expanding the money supply. And so they're paying the Saudis with these new dollars. They just create them off of the printing press, and they run over to Saudi Arabia and say, here's a new bundle of money, give us some oil. So the Saudis go over to England to buy Rolls Royces, and they find out that the price of the Rolls Royce has gone up. And we call that inflation. Inflation isn't caused by rising prices. That's the effect of the inflation. Inflation is caused by printing more money than you have goods and services to pay for. Used to be, it was printing more money than you had gold in circulation, but then we couldn't pay in gold, so we took the gold clause out of our balance of payments and said, well, we'll pay in Caterpillar tractors. Now, America, listen to this number, because this is a shocker. If you took all the money that we Americans have, that's all the money that's been printed, $13 trillion worth of it's out there in circulation. Take your $13 trillion in circulation and go down to Walmart and Caterpillar Tractor, and let's just buy goods. We'll convert our money into goods. Do you know how many goods you're going to get for your $13 trillion? 2%. 2%. If everybody went out and spent their money today, they would all get 2 cents on the dollar. So if you have $10,000 and you go out and convert your $10,000 into goods, and then take your goods home and put them on the shelf, you're going to be miles ahead of all those people that are holding dollars, because there's not enough goods out there to satisfy all those dollars. That's the bottom line. So that means then there's going to be shortages. And one of those shortages is going to be in food. And here in America, listen to this, 50% of the food that we eat today, we go to the grocery store and we buy groceries. Half of the food that you're buying in the grocery store comes from outside our borders. It's tomatoes being produced in Mexico. It's grapes being produced in Chile. It's cherries and apricots being produced in Turkey and shipped to the United States on 747s and sold in your supermarket. Boys and girls, we're paying for those grapes and those berries and those cherries and apricots with 3x5 cards. And one of these days, those people want to get paid. They want things for those 3x5 cards. And when we stiff them and we don't pay them or we don't give them 100 cents on the dollar's worth of value, they're going to say, we're not going to send you any more grapes. We're not going to send you any more apricots. We're not going to send you any more cherries until you pay us for what we already sent. And when we don't have anything to pay them with, that's called embargo. Embargo. Can you say embargo, boys and girls? Well, let's see. We're at the halfway point here, boys and girls. I'm going to tell you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. We'll do our best to tell you who we are and where we're from and what we're doing. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on subject matters such as law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. And we do that 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one. Just call the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate, and that's because most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, however, are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information, remember the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Our address is georgegordon.org. That's our webpage, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, along that line, I have been recommending that you get a copy of the Privateer. I think if you wrote them a letter or an email and you say, listen, I heard about your newsletter. Here in the United States or England or South Korea or wherever you're listening, I heard about your newsletter on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. That'll tell the people that put out the Privateer, oh, there's somebody advertising our paper. That'll make them feel real good, and they'll love you, and they'll love me. And they'll think, wow, that guy Gordon, he's pushing our newsletter. Now, I don't get paid by these people. In fact, I'm not sure that if you tell them that you heard about it here, it'll do you a lot of good, because this guy, Buckler, told me to take a long walk off of a short pier. And I don't know why, because I push his newsletter all the time. And the reason I push the Privateer newsletter, even though I'm not well-liked by this outfit, which is what I point out to you, you know, just because I promote his newsletter doesn't mean he's going to promote me. And that's because I'm very offensive, and I offend everybody. If you listen to this program, over time, you will become offended. And that's because the truth is very offensive. When you tell people where the rubber meets the road, they get mad as hell. They don't want to hear that. So that's what happens, is that you make people angry when you tell them things they don't want to hear. That's why I always tell you listeners out there, when you get to the point where you're hearing something you don't want to listen to, you just reach over and take the dial and twist it. And twist it in either direction. And shut me off. And that's what I recommend. If it gets to be too offensive to you, just shut it off. You can't handle it. Don't listen. Now, the reason I promote the privateer is because this guy has a knack for education, for teaching, that nobody else in the newsletter business has. He makes economics simple. So if you're a truck driver and you don't understand economics, which I just explained to you, and I'm not very good at it, and so this guy, Buckler, is really good. I think he'll send you a free copy. Ask him if he will. Or maybe an introductory copy for $5 or something like that. I think once you see one of these, you'll say to yourself, wow, this guy's really got his head screwed on straight. And that's my opinion of him. I think this guy Buckler has got his head screwed on straight. And that's why I cite from him from time to time. Because he's got a good source of information. He subscribes to other newsletters and other government publications and other publications that give him input and information. For instance, I would not know that the United States has a balance of trade deficit of $800 billion a year if I had not read it in one of these newsletters, because that is not being broadcast by Katie Couric. She doesn't tell you. And much of what's going on in the world I wouldn't know about if I hadn't read about it in the newsletters, the underground newsletters, the economic newsletters, because it's not reported in the mainstream press. That's because you're not supposed to know this. So if you're one of those that would like to know what you're not supposed to know because you want to eat off of the forbidden tree like Adam and Eve, well, then these newsletters are right up your alley. And this is the best educational newsletter that's out there. Now, the International Forecaster is a little better newsletter. It's more comprehensive, gives you more facts and figures, but Bob Chapman is not in the education business, and he's not explaining what these symbols and what these things mean. You have to actually know what a CDO is. I mean, and if you don't know what a CDO or an SIV is, well, then you're just kind of reading the words, and you don't really have a good grasp or understanding of what they mean. Buckler explains it. And I mean, he explains it in spades. So that's why these two newsletters, I think, are, you know, for a dummy like me, are just absolutely indispensable. So if you want to know how come I know, it's because I was told by some insiders that got the facts and figures out of the government agencies and are digging and probing, and they're telling me the answers. So then I can come on the air and I can tell you, okay, well, now here's the answer. Here's where this thing's headed. Now, I couple that with Bible prophecy, and I mentioned this a little earlier. There is a God in heaven, and he's a little ticked off right now, and he's actually in the process of withholding rain and turning our heaven to iron and our earth to brass. No, those are his words. He said, I'm gonna turn your heaven to iron and your earth to brass. That's drought. He's been doing that for a long time. And he says, I'm going to break down your high towers. That's your military establishment. And then he goes on and says, I'm going to destroy you. And you'll see this in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. So naturally, the next question comes up, well, why in the world would he want to do that? Why would God want to do that to us? And the answer is, he made a contract with your great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy 84 generations ago back at Mount Sinai. And the terms and conditions of the contract inure, that is, they mean they pass on from generation to generation forever. Forever is a long time. It means it isn't up yet. And you haven't been specifically performing to the terms and conditions of the contract down in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, Western Europe, and the United States. And he's bummed out about it. Bummed out. That means he's ticked off. That means he's upset, angry. And he says, well, here's what I'm going to do about that. When I have a contract with somebody and they don't perform, I exercise my option under the penal clause in the contract. Now, this penal clause in the contract is spelled out in spades in Deuteronomy chapter 28. So in the first broadcast, I read you a short story about famine. Famine in that short story. And I said, I'm betting on famine because here's this God says, I'm going to bring upon you, I'm going to visit famine upon the United States, Canada, Western Europe, Australia, and New Zealand. Now this year, Australia had a wheat harvest that was less than expected. In fact, it was a disastrous wheat harvest. And as a result of that, the price of wheat over the past, I guess, 8 or 9 months has doubled here in the United States. And in the year 2008, food prices, they tell us, that's from the newsletters again, are going to double again. So whatever it is that you're paying for food today, you can plan on paying twice as much through 2008 going into 2009. This is January now of 2008. In January of 2009, you should expect food prices to be much, much higher, as much as twice as high as they are today. Now, that isn't famine yet, but it's headed in that direction. Say it's headed in that direction. And you've never had famine here in the United States, Canada, and Australia, so I just wanted to share with you some thoughts from your Creator. And He said, well, I'm gonna break in. And so I took a look at that and said, I can't think of a better business to be in than food and a famine. And so I thought, maybe here's a great business opportunity. And so we teach a class here on subsistence and survival. That's how to subsist and survive. Then we teach a class on how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less. So if you've got a little acreage out here, and since wheat production is dropping off drastically, there are other things that you can grow. I don't know if you knew this or not, but you can grow. And when people can't get wheat, or when prices double, or when food prices are going up, if nothing else, you're producing your own. Now, there's a story in here. I've got a stack of paper here in front of me. There's this lady over here, and she's spending $1,000 a month on food. And one day she woke up and said, my God, that's $12,000 a year. Boys and girls, there's people that live in the world today, I don't know if you're aware of this, but people in the world that live on $2 a day. And the people who are living on $2 a day don't have $12,000 to spend on food. So, because of that, let me just give you a little number here, 365. Now, this is half the people in the world. Half. There's about 6.5 billion people in the world. 3.25 billion people. 3.25 billion, that's spelled with a B, are living on $2 a day or less. So 365 times 2 is $730 a year. This woman spent $1,000 a month on food, and the average guy in the world has $730 a year, period. And there are other people in the world that live on a dollar a day. Now, I want to point out to you that gasoline in China is the same price as it is here in the United States or higher. I don't know what the price of gasoline is, but whatever the Saudis are selling it to us Americans for, they're selling it to the Chinese. Now, gasoline in Holland, last time I got a number out of Holland, it was $6.30 a gallon. In Great Britain, it was $5.85 a gallon. Here in the United States, it's just now hitting $3 a gallon, save for you folks out in California that pay a little more. That's because you got to have clean air out there. That's because you got more government regulation out there. You got more communists, so you have a little higher gas price. But for the nationwide average, it's $3 a gallon. So we Americans are burning gasoline over here at half the price you people in Holland, Germany, France, England, China, Japan. That's why they drive little cars over there, because they pay a lot more for gasoline. Now, gasoline is a very, very intensely regulated and taxed commodity. Governments tax it. And in many countries, they tax it very high. Now, the cheapest gasoline in the world is 12 cents a gallon in Venezuela. So if you want cheap gas, you move to Venezuela, where they also make $730 a year, and that's what they live on. So, I mean, you know, just because you're going to move, you know, to Venezuela to get cheap gas doesn't mean you're going to get high wages. Now, the highest priced gas in the world is in Nigeria. That's where the gasoline is, you know, $1.50 or $2 a gallon. They produce a lot of oil over there. But they're only making $730 a year, so when you have to buy $2 gas out of $730, you can't buy very much of it. See, you Dutchmen may be spending $6.30 a gallon for gas, but you're making $20 an hour. And so, therefore, gasoline to you is cheaper than it is to the guy who's paying $2 a gallon, but he's only making, you know, maybe $2 a day. And so he has to work a whole day to buy a gallon of gasoline, but you only have to work maybe, you know, maybe 20 minutes. So that's what these economic newsletters are all about. They're filling us in and telling us what's going on around the world that the news media doesn't tell us, which gives us an edge on competition. And that's why they're called economic newsletters. They're written for business people. So if you don't subscribe because you're a wage earner, well, it makes all the sense in the world. Now, as a wage earner, you may be losing your job, and you may be required, just out of sheer necessity, to get into some kind of a business enterprise in which you can buy, sell, or trade your labor or something that you have for something else so that you can make ends meet or put some pinto beans and cornbread on the table. I mean, it could come to that. And so that's why I'm suggesting to you that you avail yourself of these newsletters and then avail yourself of our CD program. It's free. And let me tell you a little bit more. And then as time progresses along, maybe we can get to the point where we can show you how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. And that's in today's dollars. Actually, there's no limit. You can make $200,000, $300,000, $500,000 a year. You might need 50 acres, you know, to make a little more. But moral of the story is there's about 4,000 of these little economic units all over America today. And these little economic units are going to make more money in the future because, and that's because, there's going to be less and less food available in the future. And that food that is available is going to be sold at higher and higher prices. So if you're one of those people that's living in downtown Cleveland and you're in a condominium or you're in an apartment, you know, you better hope that you've got a job and that you can be trading your money for what goods and services are available. Because if you lose your job, you could go hungry. Now, that's what happened in the last Great Depression. I wouldn't be surprised by what happens again. Now, let me give you the name and number for this international, not the international forecaster, but rather the privateer. The privateer is published by a fellow named William A.M. Buckler at Post Office Box 2004 in a place called Noosa Heads, Queensland, Australia. All right, that's Australia. Noosa Heads, N-O-O-S-A-H-E-A-D-S, two words, Queensland, Q-L-D, Queensland. And there's a number here. Get this number down, 4567. Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. Now, I would start out, if I were you, by sending this guy an email. And their webpage is www.theprivateer.com. And there's a hyphen between the and privateer. Don't forget that hyphen. It's www.the-privateer.com. And then their email address is CAPT. That's Captain. He's the captain of the privateer. That's CAPT@the-privateer.com. They also have a phone number. I'll give you their phone number. It's 617. That's 617. 5471. And then the last four digits is 1960. So that's 617-5471-1960. Now, as he progresses along through his newsletter, he tells us here on page 3 in the business cycle, by now, historical business cycle was discovered in the late 1700s in the newly industrializing Great Britain, and it was observed that the real producing economy went into a sequence of irregular upswings, followed by a downswing. And perceptive people back in those times began to ask why that was so. The British currency school led by Lord Overstone discovered the answer. It was observed that a business upswing was always preceded by the British commercial banks issuing new loans, which infused new means of payments, newly borrowed money, into the financial system. In effect, the upswing in the business cycle was always preceded by a credit expansion originating in the commercial banking system. Today, we would say that the credit cycle always precedes the business cycle and rolls right along with it until the credit cycle ebbs ever so slightly, with the new issuance slowing down somewhat. After that, the business cycle also turns down after a delay, and then the general economy is either headed towards a recession or is actually already in a real recession. And boys and girls, that's where we are today. We're in a real recession. But this time, we are headed for a real depression. Depression. That's a very, very, very serious recession. All right. So understanding prices, credit, and interest rates is very important. Fundamentally, credit is easy to understand. Its definition is present goods for future goods. Did you get that? Understanding prices, credit, and interest rates. Fundamentally, credit is easy to understand. The definition of credit is this, quote, present goods for future goods. And the borrower can lay his hands on economic goods that exist in the present after having borrowed the money with which to buy those goods. Having done that, the borrower is under an obligation to repay the lender with his own economic goods at an agreed-upon time in the future. This is where interest rates come into the picture. It is a built-in fact of human existence that an apple today, for which people are prepared to pay a money price, is valued at a higher level than an apple at any time in the future, say 1 year from now. And this leads to the discounted value of that future apple. And that discount is called the rate of interest. See how easy this is getting to be, boys and girls? For example, if apples for sale are valued at 100 monetary units and people willing to pay cash of 100 monetary units to buy an apple today, then the valuation of apples and their prices will be the same. But that is not so for an apple promised to be delivered 1 year from now. That apple in the future is valued at perhaps 90 monetary units. The future discount then is 10 monetary units, and that's called the interest rate. Transferred from apples to money, the same principle applies. People place a lower value upon money in the future than they place upon money in hand today because they cannot spend future money today. So all future money is discounted just like future apples. Money prices, in their turn, are always the ratios at which money is surrendered for any present economic good. 7 units of money for good A, 7,000 for good B, and so on. Further, for any exchange to actually take place between the buyer and seller, the buyer has to value the economic goods received more than the sum of money surrendered, and the seller has to value the money received more than the economic good that he surrenders to the buyer. Were that not the case, no sale or exchange could take place. The potential buyer would regard the money price as too high and forego the purchase, while the seller would see an offer of any lower sum of money as too low and forego the sale because he doesn't want to give up his goods for too little money. In effect, it's the difference in valuation between the buyer and seller which drive exchange. And this includes the exchange of present money for future money. So as I always tell my students in my business school, I say, now listen, all transactions are made by unequals. If we're both equal, we cannot buy, sell, and trade with one another. And so one of us has to be unequal with the other. For instance, if I've got a battery charger here in my shop, and I go to the Walmart store, and as I'm walking down the aisle, I see they have 24 battery chargers for sale. And I look at the price, and I say, wow, look at this battery charger, it's only $24.95. But I decide I don't need to buy it because I've got a battery charger at home that maybe I spent $35 or $50 for or $100 for. I don't need a battery charger. I've got one. Ah, but you say Walmart has 50 battery chargers. So what? I don't need one of them. I've already got one. Now, one day my battery charger breaks. Now I'm walking down the aisle at Walmart and I see battery chargers for $59.95. They've gone up by $30. And I say, wow, look at these battery chargers. They've gone up more than double. But my battery charger broke and now I don't have a battery charger. Now I'm willing to spend $59 to buy a battery charger that last week I wouldn't give $25 for because I had one. But this week I don't have one. And I need one. And so now I value the battery charger more highly than I do the $59.95. So when the example of the future discount on the Apple, that is 100 versus 90, is transferred into the realm of money today and money in the future, it is expressed as a rate of interest over a year, year by year, of 11.1%. Potential borrowers who value 111 monetary units 1 year ahead of less than 100 monetary units in hand today will see that this is an opportunity to borrow. And so they go out into the marketplace and they borrow. And so this is why they lower the interest rate. They're trying to get us to go out and borrow more money. And we did. We went out and borrowed money and we bought big fancy houses. Okay, well now, boys and girls, it's time to pay it back. And what's worse was they put some clauses in the contract that said they're going to raise the interest rates. Yeah, there was some fraud involved, but now it's time to pay back. And now when we can't pay back, they're going to take the collateral, and that's the house. Now that's the value of these economic newsletters. Had you known that in advance, you wouldn't have gotten involved in those adjustable rate mortgages, would you? I didn't. I saw this coming 7 or 8 years ago, and it's because I read it in the Privateer. I read it in the International Forecaster. But now, boys and girls, we're headed toward famine, and there's no better business to be in, kids, than food in a famine. I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to cut it off right there. We'll take it up right here next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, which is what you've been listening to for the past hour from Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.